Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Santita Jackson Show. It's Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. Hey, everybody. Coming to you from the flagship station of Progressive Talk Radio in the United States, the largest Progressive Talk Radio station, WCPT, 820 in Chicago, and the voice of Progressive Minnesota, AM 950 Radio up in Minneapolis, St. Paul. How are you today? I'm so glad to be with you. You know, the election is still popping. What happened up in Detroit? Got to talk about that. What's happening in Georgia? Got to talk about that. This election is not over. They're still in the process, everybody, of certifying the vote. So technically, Vice President Biden and Senator Harris will be the vice president-elect, in her case, and the president-elect after the Electoral College meets. I don't care what the mainstream media is telling you. That is the way this works. That's why what happened last night in Detroit, in Wayne County, which is the county seat of Detroit, among other cities and towns. That's why what happened was so important last night when you saw the public outcry, when the fight was on, the push was on from President Trump's team not to certify the election. We need to pay attention to everything. You know, don't act like this is a fait accompli. It is not. This fight is not over for your vote. The fight to verify the votes, the fight to certify the vote, it is still on. Everybody, on the Santita Jackson and Friends page, where we are, hey, everybody, liking and sharing, everybody. Savannah from Germantown, Memphis. And Vicky and Michael Ann and Kenneth and Raphael and Lorraine and Linnell, all of you. Please like and share, like and share, like and share, everybody, and let everybody know about us, Robert Williams and Will Jones. That's right. Like and share, like and share, like and share, everybody. Miss Wanda down in North Carolina, sending you much love. Give my love to Mr. Corey. Like and share, everybody. Like and share, Michael Ann. Michael Ann, aloha, my sister. Like and share, everybody. Please like and share. We've got a lot to talk about with these elections today. In Chicago, we're expecting a high of 51 degrees. It'll be mostly sunny. Minneapolis, St. Paul, a high of 52 degrees, partly cloudy. And it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be beautiful. Beautiful day, partly sunny, you know, mostly sunny, partly cloudy. Look, the sun is there, whether it has cloud cover or not. The Dow closed down 167 points yesterday. The NASDAQ closed down 24 points yesterday. The S&P 500 closed down 17 points. So I want you to call me or text me at 773-763-WCPT. Call me or text me at 773-763-9278. Thank you, GWC Injury Lawyers. They give us the opportunity, or give you the opportunity, to text. But join my morning stars over here. Like and share, everybody. Thank you, Lorraine, for pushing everybody to like and share. Everybody, Robert, I love Motown too. I love Detroit. I really do. Have you ever been to Motor City Soul Food up there? It's fabulous. Oh my gosh. Wow. We're going to be talking with Dr. Deborah Furholden about these vaccines, Moderna and Pfizer, at least in the United States. Those are the vaccines that we're hearing about. But you know, Black Americans are still the most hesitant to get a COVID-19 vaccine. And it seems like most Americans are hesitant or are pushing back against the vaccines. Why do you think that is? I know in Black America, we've had a real history of having been experimented upon since slavery. And so it has never stopped. And so we are not trusting of these vaccines. But I want to know what you're thinking. I mean, as you hear, as we every day, we're alarmed by the rise in COVID-19 infections and coronavirus infections and the development of the COVID-19 disease. Will these news reports make you more inclined? I want to know, are you more inclined now, the more you hear about the deaths, the more you hear about the infections? Because, you know, I mean, everyone, they're sounding more and more alarmed. No one is talking to us about therapeutics. Now, mind you, Dr. Fauci is taking 2 grams of vitamin C every day. And he walks 3.5 miles every day. Do you know Dr. Fauci is almost 80? He looks fantastic. He takes care of himself. takes care of himself. So, hey, I mean, what about the things that we can do to help stave it off, to keep our immune system boosted? And no one's talking about that, but we're going to do that. We always do that with Dr. Deborah Holden. And before we get to some good news with Reverend Dr. Gregory Seal Livingston, let us get to some of the news that's percolating through our minds today. Did you see Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham, fist bump with Kamala Harris on the Senate floor yesterday? Now, mind you, despite reportedly asking election officials in several states if they could throw out certain ballots, Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina appeared to congratulate. That's right, fist bump, and then he tapped her, he squeezed her shoulder. Vice President-elect Kamala Harris on the Senate floor on Tuesday. Wow. And fellow Republicans, Senators Mike Rounds, Tim Scott, she was talking with them, James Lankford, also congratulated Harris. Everybody, please don't be surprised by that. These people work together and they get along for the most part. They really don't. In fact, you're an outlier if you are personally in conflict with someone with whom you have a political disagreement. That's how things roll up there. And that's how it should be rolling out here. Indeed, Senator Lindsey Graham said that he'd like to support some voter fraud. And he is pushing Georgia's Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger in private to legally throw out cast ballots. People are asking for an investigation. What do you think should happen? He spoke with officials also in Arizona and Nevada about the election. Is that appropriate? And just think of his position on judiciary. Something to think about. In a stunning reversal, GOP officials in key Michigan County, that is Wayne County, which is where you have Detroit, Motown, that's right. Guess what? They reversed their initial refusal to certify the vote tallies in the Detroit area. Now, they were going to certify all the votes around Detroit, but not the votes in Detroit. They struck a last-minute compromise with the Democrats that diffused this political fight that erupted all over social media and on Zoom. There was a public outcry. Voters were very angry, and there were charges of racism. And there was an unexpected twist that came after the four-member Wayne County Board of Canvassers had deadlocked on the day of the deadline for Michigan County to certify the vote. We've got to talk about that, everybody. What happened up in... Ooh, they're always just getting down up in Detroit. I just love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Philadelphia has announced a new safer-at-home set of restrictions to fight rising COVID cases, and they are really restrictive, everybody. The following businesses and activities are not allowed. That is, high schools and colleges must move to online instruction only. Indoor dining at restaurants and other food restaurants, businesses, they can't do that. Theaters closed, performance spaces closed, bowling alleys, arcades, they had to get very specific, museums, libraries, casinos, recreational activities and sports for youth, community groups and schools, everything is being shut down. Gyms and indoor exercise classes, exercise groups and classes may continue outdoors. Senior day services, they're even asking you to wear masks indoors. Religious institutions are permitted to have people indoors, but density must be kept at 5 people per 1,000 square feet. You know, what do you think about that? Because we're under a voluntary stay-at-home, a suggested stay-at-home here in Chicago. What do you think about that? Now, there's a question that I read about in Common Dreams, and I want you to think about this and let me know what you think. With this pandemic being a national emergency, should Vice President Biden, when he becomes president, enact Medicare for All by executive action? Now, this is a very interesting article that came out in The American Prospect. Journalist David Diane presented a convincing case in his article that President-elect Joe Biden, once sworn into office in January, would have the legal authority to immediately provide complete Medicare coverage to everyone in the country via executive action. Do you think he should do that? Let me know. Let me know. Let me know what you think. For everybody, because that would eliminate all of these incredibly high bills that people are getting for their hospitalization. Reverend Dr. Gregory Seal Livingston, you can you can get the test. It's the healing. that's going to take you under. And chaos, President Trump has fired the top election security official, Christopher Krebs, from the Department of Homeland Security. Wow, everybody, I told you the election is still on. Reverend Dr. Gregory Seal Livingston, the election is still on. This stuff is not settled yet. Reverend.
Well, my. Welcome to America, right? Good morning to you, Deepa. It's always a pleasure. This is America. I don't know where people thought we were, who they thought we were dealing with, and what has happened over the past almost 300 years. This is how we do it. I was reading this morning about the Mayflower Compact and the Pilgrims and the Puritans and the British and King James and all these things. I was reading about all that and just comparing it to right now. And the comparison is very, 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 very similar, you know. And so, you know, you got slaves getting here, Africans who are beaten into slavery, getting here in 1619, the Mayflower coming in 1620. And as Jackie Gleason used to say, and away we go, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have the Native American population setting up Thanksgiving in 1621, you know, teaching the pilgrims how to fish and how to farm and things like that. And again, mm-hmm. This is America. What happened to the Native American? What happened to the African-American slave? What even happened to the religious community in America that was part of the Church of England, you know, which was Anglican in England and Episcopalian here? And so all of this has rooted. All of this is rooted in something. And one of the things that's really important in terms of inspiration, if one sees oneself as a person who was visible and invisible, if I talk sometimes, Santita, about the phenomenology of the invisible, if you will. And like Ralph Ellison, he says, you know, an invisible man. I'm not talking about scientific ectoplasm, but there is an invisibility that exists that is part of all of who we are. And so if you understand that about yourself, if you can even sense that about yourself, what you also need is some spiritual rootage. You need some spiritual roots, as it were. And the wonderful thing about spiritual roots and about spirit rootage is that it is eternal. It does not age. And when you can connect yourself to your spiritual rootage, to your invisible lineage, as it were, to your, you know, never think that modernity is better than the ancient and the ancient is better than modernity, because we're all just human beings that are making our ways along. The purposes and the goals are the same. But when you understand that you are connected, if you will, to persons who have overcome incredible odds, that you are connected, don't use the American lens of color to connect yourself. I'm not saying that you don't look at your family. We don't be color blind. That's a disease. We are color appreciative. What I'm saying is, don't use the racist way of talking about yourself, because we run much deeper. Quick example. Mm-hmm. You know, my
yes.
Talk, Cornell McClellan, you know, he trains the Obamas. He had a gym here before he went to the White House. And there was a young lady, Krithika Rajapuram, and she and her mother were the two leading Indian, you know, dancers in the world. And they were doing a show over at the Chicago History Museum. I'll never forget, I went vegetarian for like about 6 months, because Cornell's big vegan guy. And so I told Krithika, I said, Krit, I've gone vegetarian. She said, oh, that's great. I am too. And I said, well, I've been vegetarian for 6 months. And she said, and I said, how long have you been vegetarian? And she looked at me with a bemusement. She says, my family has been vegetarian for 18 generations. And that's when it really hit me, Santita,
sure.
About what slavery had done to the African in America. You know, because, again, we are a new people in America. 400 years is long enough. But then when I began to think about her 18 generations, and then when I go back to my spiritual roots, it goes way back, and let me say this, in the Garden of Eden. Man,
yes.
I was struck in his image and made in his likeness. I'm a bad man, and anybody who believes like me, you bad too. So be inspired, everybody. We got roots.
Absolutely. But you know what? People are carnivores. They're okay, too. You know, because it also.
I'm a carnivore.
No, but you're absolutely right. But you know, that having been said, people also eat what they have in their environment.
Well, Eskimos,
you know,
can't be vegetarians. Eskimos
yeah.
are carnivores. Period.
That's right. So I mean, it's, you know, I think that we have to just look at where people are, and, you know, because there are more than Africans in this world, right? People in Antarctica, there are people in Europe, the people in South and Central America. I think that we all have something. Australia, the indigenous people there, the Aborigines, we have something to learn from every body in the human family, because remember, we are one. You know, reading your biblical text, that we were separated as punishment, not as something, it was not something we're supposed to celebrate. We're supposed to really come together. I love you, Reverend Dr. Gregory Seal Livingston. Let me bring on Reverend, excuse me, I'm about to make her a reverend too, but she's not. She's a doctor.
Reverend Livingston. Right now, watch.
Look, she, hey, how about that?
Dr. Deborah Fulton. Shondo, Doc. Shondo.
Come on. You know she's ready to preach. You know she's ready to preach. All the time, she does it every day, and we love her for it, and we love you too, Reverend Dr. Gregory C. Livingston. Brilliant, brilliant theologian, preacher, teacher. Reverend, you know what? There is so much on the table. Talk about warp speed. Oh, my gosh. So much has happened so quickly. And now, you know, it seemed like a few months ago, Dr. Deborah Verholzen, Associate Dean of Public Health at Michigan State University, it seems like there was a little bit of a lull, you know, this summer. And I thought it was interesting. You and I talked about this. I said, now that they want us to go back to work, they're not talking about the coronavirus as much. But, I mean, the media is doing a lot of politicizing of this, too, because they're like, you know, oh, you know, the rates are raging. And that's true. And now they're telling you every day. And it's almost sounding, it is alarming to see the rate at which this virus and the disease that can accompany it, the rate at which it's raging. But, you know, what I'm trying to find out is about these vaccines, because, you know, if I have COVID-19, the vaccine is not going to help me. OK. And there is still a great deal of number one, we're not hearing about therapeutics, but they're trying to figure out how to transport these billions of vaccines, because they need to be kept at a certain temperature, like below Antarctica temperatures. They need to be extremely, extremely cold. So, okay, let's start. Where do we begin with this? Because the data from Pew and from the Pew Research Center and every place else, more than half of Americans are still reluctant to take this vaccine, even though Dr. Fauci said this is the cavalry. You know, help is on the way. In fact, help will be here as soon as we get the vaccines. Americans aren't quite feeling like that, Dr. Verholzen. You know?
Well, and Dr. Fauci now has a less than stellar record with us. Let us not forget, Dr. Fauci, and everybody's been dogging Dr. Redfield at the CDC. Dr. Fauci was out there with no mask on in the beginning, too. Dr. Fauci went on 60 Minutes and said, a mask ain't the answer. That's not going to really help you. You know, Dr. Fauci has been bullied by the POTUS, you know, and so for him to now say, oh, no, vaccine is good, it's safe, y'all are good. I'm looking at Dr. Fauci's side eye. I got one eyebrow raised about him, too, now. Mm-hmm. He's undermined his trust as far as I'm concerned. And when I explicitly asked Dr. Fauci specifically about equity in this vaccine, in the vaccine trials, in the distribution, and what were they going to do to ensure that once a safe and credible vaccine was available, that there would be equity in its distribution? His answer was weak. It was like, why would we do it any other way? Of course we're going to ensure that. And I just looked at him like, he didn't get it. No, and not of course we're going to do it. What are you going to do? How are you going to ensure that? What is the plan? Well, we're going to send it to everywhere. Yeah, but how are you going to ensure it? They sent testing everywhere. And guess what? Black and brown people and poor people got marginalized in that process. They sent tests to black and brown communities, and white people drove to brown communities to get tested. You know? I'm not kidding you. That is what happened. And so I'm like, they just don't get it. Because their lived experience doesn't map on to one steeped in systemic racism. No, because it does. Their experience does map on to that. but not from the perspective of the person who's being oppressed. Their experience maps onto it from the side of the oppressor or from the vantage point of an observer. And to that end, they just don't even think about or see the world in a way that would have them by themselves be competent and capable to even do the things that they're doing and make sure that Black people are treated fairly, to make sure that we aren't excluded. You heard what happened? They said 78% of the, and I can't remember if it was the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine, has already been bought by the nation.
That was in my headlines yesterday. I said, you all are not even trying to be fair. The richest nations have bought up the vaccines. So yes, they're leaving 22% for billions of people. What is that?
Yes.
I mean, how do they do that?
And then this whole myth and this whole lie, oh, Black people need it so bad. They're 2.5 times more likely to contract COVID, you know, 3 times more likely to be hospitalized, 2 times more likely to die from it. So y'all got to get the vaccine. No, we don't got to do nothing. And as somebody who proudly pops her chest out and says, we eliminated the racial disparities in COVID in Flint and Genesee County and in the state of Michigan because we did the work. There's nothing about being Black, you know, because of our skin or our genes that places us in harm's way for COVID. It's the lived experience of the Black American that puts them in harm's way. It's the excess stress that we endure that has us sometimes potentially respond to things differently. It's the fact that we've been historically marginalized, and even though they printed billions and billions and billions, I don't even know if the number is in the trillions yet, but I know they printed billions of dollars for COVID. But reparations was the most ridiculous thing that people have heard of. We can't afford that. Well, y'all surely produced all this magic money. And literally my daughter asked me, Mom, where did all that money come from? I said, baby, they literally just printed it.
You know what? I want you to stay right there. Stay right there because I want us to talk about this. I want to hear from people. I want to hear from you all. I mean, because now almost every person who has taken the vaccine, people who've been part of the trials, they have produced more doctors, more Black doctors, more Black people than I have seen on TV in a little bit. I mean, and I said, okay, you're trying to convince me. I'm not convinced. Are you convinced? And I'm not an anti-vaxxer, everybody. I am pro-vaccine safety. And if you've not done anything before, if you've not helped me before now, you know, it's kind of hard to trust you now. So we need to make this right. And you know what? Black people are not alone. A lot of people feel strangely about this, and we need to talk about this because we got a pandemic. We do need some help. More of the Santita Jackson Show right here on WCPT and AM 950 Radio. Back in just a minute.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
There was no birth certificate for her, so we guesstimated she was about 94, 95. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show. Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. I want you to call me or text me. I love talking to you. I love talking to you on Facebook on the Santita Jackson and Friends page and on WCPT's page where we are streaming as well. But I want to hear from you. I want to hear your voices. 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278. You can text, thanks to GWC Injury Lawyers, at that same number, 773-763-9278. I want to know how you feel about the vaccine. We're now hearing about the rate of infection, which has just skyrocketed. Most of America is on lockdown. In fact, some physicians are saying that America is a COVID-19 hotspot. Wow. Wow. The whole country. And you're seeing more and more restrictive measures being put into place. They say don't call it a lockdown because that's a right-wing, allegedly, term. It's not a right-wing term. Not for me. That's not how I'm using it. If you're not supposed to leave your home, you're locked in, okay? And if it's saving your life, I'm not mad at it. But you need to empower people so they don't feel like prisoners. Empower people so they know what they can take, how they can boost their immune systems so that if they do get COVID-19, they can fight it. Something, help me. Deborah Verholden, but you know, I appreciate the fact that you are one of the few people who you have been in the room virtually talking with Dr. Fauci, talking with Dr. Redfield, talking with the people who run the CDC, who really they are the experts on infectious disease and on the vaccines and how they should be distributed. And you have been advocating, along with Dr. Leanne McDougall from the National Medical Association and attorney C.K. Hoffler from the National Bar Association, for equity. You say not equality, but equity. You say, wait a minute. Anytime 78% of the richest countries on earth have bought the vaccines, only 22% left for Africa, the poorer parts of Asia. I mean, really, everybody? What is up with that? Have we not learned anything in this whole process? While the whole world is suffering, you mean the richest countries can't figure out how to be fair to all of the other countries? We're not going to come out of this, Deborah, until we do this the right way. I'll tell you that. In the meantime, the Pew Research Center is saying that Black Americans, according to this headline, have less confidence in scientists to act in the public interest, which is something you've been pushing. Black Americans are the most hesitant to get a COVID-19 vaccine. That's another headline. Black Americans face higher COVID-19 risks. We're more hesitant to trust a medical scientist and get vaccinated, and on and on and on and on. And according to this headline from the BBC, the low trust in the vaccination is a global crisis. This is not just confined to the United States, Dr. Deborah Verholden. Mm-hmm. Brilliant epidemiologist. So you need to help me. I didn't give you anything that you don't already have. And so I just want to know, what are we looking at? Because now we're going into the holiday season, Deborah. Dr. Deborah Verholden, next week it's Thanksgiving. I want to see my family. I'm not going to be able to look at. I'm not going to be with them in a group. Then Christmas. Yeah. Oh my goodness. I mean, my parents' anniversary is New Year's Eve. We always do something on New Year's Eve. Not this year. I guess we'll do it by Zoom. Somebody'll have to try and steady the camera on them. what are we to do? I mean, what question should we be asking about the vaccines? Because, see, beyond where you, the space in which you operate with the doctors, Redfields and Fauci's and doctors and Burks and all these people, we have to interact with our physicians. And, you know, the doctors, like you, have always been the smartest kids in the class. And they have you all have a lot of power in our lives. I know you're not a medical doctor, you're an epidemiologist, but still you operate in that. That's your space. What if your doctor gives you pushback about not taking the vaccine? I mean, how are you supposed, particularly poor people who don't have.
I'm telling you that right now. People need to have some real sensitivity to this issue. They need to have some real sensitivity. And I read one of the articles, and it said that, you know, people were in the focus group citing things like Tuskegee. It's like, this stuff is not that long ago. This stuff is not that long ago. You know, we read the Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. We saw the movie. What you didn't see is how horrible and awful her death was.
Mm.
What do you mean? Her death was an ugly death, and I don't think there was anything that could have been done to prevent that or avoid that. But then the notion that this doctor discovered that her cells would replicate and duplicate outside of the human body, they had never seen or experienced anything like that before. And trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of vaccines and other therapeutics have been manufactured because of the immortal cells of Henrietta Lacks. Yet her family continues to live in extreme poverty. Like, any doctor who would say, well, ain't none of that relevant. You just doesn't get it. And I would get a new doctor. And so, no, this is not, this is the impact. And you know
well,
what?
No, back up. Okay. Because I want to ask you about a patient's rights, but the reality and then get us to what a patient has the right to ask a doctor and take and not take.
If they forced all the white people to take it, and then the people who already got the disease, we'd get to herd immunity. We could get there without not a narrow black person taking a vaccine. then that's real. And I'm not saying black people shouldn't take the vaccine, but people need to bring some sensitivity and understanding. Our medical mistrust is valid. It's valid. It's informed by something. It's informed by a deep history and a really ugly past of us being used as guinea pigs, intentionally having harm done to us, being lied to, allowed to suffer with an illness where a week's course of antibiotics was available to cure you, but instead allowed to suffer for a decade. You know, so that comes from somewhere. So the fact that we won't jump in line right now to have this vaccine tried out on us or jump in the front of the line, and it's not that black people aren't saying by and large, I'm not getting it. They're saying, I'm not getting it right now. Mm-hmm. You take it. You take
Mikey.
It. And let me see how it goes. You know, show me. And we'll see how you do, and then come holler at me after that. You know, so I think it's valid, and I think people are going to have to have some for our people. And Dr. Fauci, I'm sorry, he don't cut it for me. He really doesn't cut it for me. So just because he said it, he said a lot of things. I actually am hoping that they replace Dr. Fauci.
Really? Why is that?
I've grown increasingly annoyed by him, and I watch him. He's like a celebrity now, mm-hmm. and I've watched who he's become with that celebrity, though. He likes it. He likes being on TV. He likes going on Instagram Live. He likes doing conversations with celebrities. He likes doing, you know, he did this thing with us at Rainbow Push. It's been hard to get Dr. Fauci if you at no name institution or no name you, mm-hmm. but he'll go on an Instagram Live with a Hollywood celebrity. He went on with that girl. I could see her face. Her name is Jennifer something. And he said, oh, there was like 3 million people. You know, I don't get that many that come to a lecture. I don't even get 300 people sometimes. And I thought, boy, he's really soaking up the sun right now.
Well, you know what? I understand that because that's part of, you know, that's part of the danger or one of the challenges of fame and all of that. I get that. You know, it's just, you know, once you come down from the clouds, okay, I'll give you your moment to do that. But once you come down, I need you to be sane. And what I need more than anything, we need some answers here. And And like I said, I was dismayed by the fact that, you know, I had following his lead and a lot of people, I have friends who are in, you know, this medical, in the public health space. They were saying you don't need a mask or mask like in January, February. I mean, because I've been looking at this since last year. And my mother looked over her reading glasses and said, don't believe that. I said, OK, now I'm going to listen to my mother. Okay. She said, no, 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 no. If they're all masked up in Asia, you should be masked up too. It's breaking out over there first. Okay. Now, so when you all talk about mother wit, see, my mother's raised 5 kids to maturity. I'm listening to her. How about that? Okay. I'm going to do that. If I want to find out about vaccines, even before I go to my physician, I'm going to ask my mama, how did you vaccinate all of us? I mean, how did this work? How did you make us all healthy? How did you do that? And so for him not to say, well, you know, we didn't have enough PPEs. You know what you should have done? You should have said, you know what, you need masks. We don't have enough PPEs. So what you should do is you need to get a whole lot of fabric. You know me, I put a mattress over my face. Put it over your face and walk down the street. Okay? Because that's what you need. But you do need a mask, everybody. And hold on until we get the masks. It's as if they weren't even trying to do that. I mean, so when you have all of these crazy actors in this, what are we supposed to do, Deborah? Because now every day we're hearing, we're getting our movements are more and more restricted. Now in Philadelphia, I mean, please, they're telling you to wear a mask in your home. What are we supposed to do? What are the questions that we should ask? And again, say if you're going to the county hospital, what if you don't have a private physician, Deborah? And a lot of us don't have a private primary care physician. What if you go to the county hospital? What rights do you have as someone who is poor, uninsured, underinsured? What rights do you have? What questions should you be asking?
Well, nobody can force a vaccine in your arm, period. We don't have that power and authority. And if anybody ever issued something like that, I guarantee you it would quickly be shot down through litigation, because you have a right to have control over your own body and what goes in it. As far as what kind of questions should we ask, I don't think a lack of having our questions answered is the problem. It's a lack of trust in the people, the data that's being presented to us, and the people who are answering the questions. So to go back to Dr. Fauci, I said, how come y'all aren't, and Dr. Redfield, I said, how come y'all aren't doing a daily briefing on CNN letting us know what you know today? Hmm. And he said, well, we are. You don't see us out talking about this every day. No, actually, I don't. I know. And there was a period where, now for my spirit, I had to stop doing this. But there was a period where my TV was just on CNN all the time. Mm-hmm. Even if the volume was down, it was just on all the time. I'm consuming the little ticker tape headlines running across the bottom. I'm seeing the faces and the names of who's on. It was just like a lot of consumption of that news. I never saw him on there. I definitely didn't see Dr. Redfield on there. So the problem is the messenger, I think. We've got untrusted messengers who've lost credibility in our community. So I think this whole show me, is that's what we've got. That's where we are. People aren't going to believe or trust. And honestly, I don't really either, what people are saying. And I'm looking at some of these reports that have come out that so-called talk about what the data tell us. And I'm like, I just don't believe these people. I don't believe them. And then the one vaccine has to be kept at such a low temperature. I'm like, how is that even going to be transported?
Wait a minute. When they emit CO2, carbon dioxide, you're going to kill everybody who's flying the plane? Deborah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not you, and I've been reading. And I'm like, but everybody on Earth is supposed to have this vaccine. Look, everybody, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I am not. I want safety for everybody. When you read about Henrietta Lacks, when you start to read about what happened to African-Americans on plantations, when you know that American gynecology was founded on experimentations upon black women who were enslaved, enslaved, not black slaves, black women who were in a state of slavery. They did unmentionable experiments. They probably killed people. I mean, Deborah, I mean, and this is where we are in a pandemic. And Renee, I want you to call me. You need to call me because I didn't know this. They're talking about reopening the public schools here in Chicago in January. How's that going to work? And who's making that kind of decision, Deborah?
Good question. I don't, I don't think there's anything that really anyone can say or do to assuage our concern. I don't. I think this is going to be one of those things where we're going to have to see. Let's wait and let's get y'all all jump to the front of the line and let's see what happens. You know, because the lie and the myth that I won't allow to just reside, and I will push back every time I have the opportunity to. I've extended an invitation to Dr. Fauci, Collins, Redfield, Perna, and Slowey to do a roundtable discussion on equity in this vaccine. We'll see if they accept it. If not, I'll have to invite a rapper or some other celebrity or whatever. You know, maybe IG Live it so that, you know, they can still see value in it or something. You know, I wanted to actually put this in a journal that I'm an editor of called Health Equity, so that the scientific community and people who deal with equity can hear their thoughts and maybe be trusted, credible messengers out in the community. So I don't know if that has enough cachet for them, but we'll see what happens. And but people are going to want to see. And the lie and the myth is that this vaccine is going to be the answer for Black people. It's like we don't have a vaccine in Flint, Genesee County, and we got rid of the disparity. We got rid of the disparity without a vaccine in Flint and Genesee County, Michigan. And we did that because we know what the problems were. And the solutions that we implemented were a match for the level of the problem. See, the solution of a vaccine for Black people isn't the answer to COVID equity, because that doesn't deal with the factors underlying what the causes of the causes. What gave way to COVID equity was not the unavailability of a vaccine. It's systemic and institutionalized racism that Black and brown people are constantly, if we're not in the direct line of fire, we're in the wake of it. You know, and so until we deal with that and start to dismantle a system and a structure that was not designed for us to win, it wasn't designed for us to have equitable access and opportunities for health. By its very design, we were meant to be at the bottom. We were never meant to have fair chance, equal opportunities for success, equal access. It was never designed for any of that. The system is functioning exactly as it was built and designed to, you know, and so it's tone deaf for me to, for them to act like the vaccine is going to be the great equalizer for Black people. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. And even if the vaccine, you know, of course, it's going to support lower transmission rates and less severe cases and all that other stuff. How none of them have answered the question, how will you ensure that if Black people raise their hand and allow you to use us as guinea pigs for the trials, how will you ensure that when a state vaccine is available, that we won't be marginalized in the distribution and administration of that vaccine? General Perna had the nerve to say, well, the vaccine is going to be available to people for free. And I hit him with, like, the commercial. I said, free, 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 free? Like, or just free. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, like, everything on the rim, out the door, I just show up with my arm out and I get the vaccine. Something in this don't sound right. And do you know what he said? Mm. He said, well, what's in the vial is free, but somebody might actually charge you to administer it. I rolled my eyes. I said, well, that's your version of free. My version of free, 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 that ain't that. Free is free. If you're going to tell me, and literally it's like saying, you know, you can get this free house, but the key to open any of the doors and windows costs $1 million.
What is that?
What good is the stuff in the vial? Can I show up to some site and say, that's okay, just give me the vial and I'll get it administered myself? Of course not. You know, so they're just tone deaf. They're just tone deaf to the conditions and the experiences of Black people. And that's why they needed more Black people involved in the trials. At the bench, from the design, thinking about equity and some of these issues in advance. But that's not how their minds work, and that's not where their values are.
And I'm going to tell you, I'm worried about people in Appalachia, the poor. Poor white people. I mean, you know, because it has always been clear to me, but it's becoming more and more clear, I think, to more and more people, that the marginalized, whatever your color, face this kind of course, it happens to, we're the canaries in the mine, Black people are, because we get the most horrifying treatment. But it's happening everywhere. You look at how they dumped these opioids on poor white people to numb them out to the fact that their jobs were gone forever. I mean, this is just so mean. I mean, how can I trust you to do this fairly and equitably when you haven't even regulated the sale of the vaccines? You would sell 78% of the vaccines to the richest people on earth, to the richest countries. Are you serious?
Of course.
Who does that?
It's a business. They're probably chomping at the bit, just salivating all day, every day, about how much money they're going to make on this vaccine.
And that's
so much
the problem.
Money has been made. Look at all the billionaires that have emerged during this. Not millionaires, billionaires that have emerged. You got to remember, Jay-Z and Beyonce combined are worth just over $1 billion. Like two greats of this modern day era in an industry that we know garners tons and tons and tons of money for some. We're talking people. These people got clothing lines and fragrance lines and on top of their whole career. You know, Beyonce is a pretty acclaimed actress and all that. Combined, their collective wealth that they've built over the last 20 years is just over $1 billion. And you've got individuals out here that we've never heard of who became a billionaire in 8 or 9 months because of COVID. Like, a lot of money is being made right now.
Stay right there. Stay right there. Because, Marnie, I know you want to come in, but I'm going to bring on Attorney Darrell Jones these last 3 minutes because we have got to talk about this vote. There's so much going on. I mean, including that. But stay right there. Stay right there because the Biden team is saying, hey, wait a minute. You've got to give us access to what's happening with this transition. We've got to. People will die if we don't get the access to the information on COVID-19. But right now, we're still trying to certify the vote. That's what happened up in Michigan last night. Attorney Darrell Jones, Transformative Justice Coalition. We're still trying to certify the vote state by state. Attorney Darrell Jones, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Santita. I'm wonderful. Thank you so much. And what an incredible night we've had in the state of Michigan. Oh, my goodness. Look, how did you get to the point where Michigan, the state of Michigan, and the county where it was taken, that they voted overwhelmingly one way, but the election officials, with four election officials, two Democrat, two Republican, divide on it. They divide on it. And where do they focus? They only focus on one area in Michigan, and that is Detroit. And let me give props and shouts out to our brothers and sisters in Detroit who showed up at that meeting and showed out and said, you will not dilute our votes. You will not lynch our votes. You're going to count our votes. You're going to make this fair. And as a result, they had to certify that election with the pressure that was put on them from the black community and the brown community there in Detroit. Let me tell you, that's the same determination we need to be taking down into Georgia. Because when we go down into Georgia, everything you see them trying to do now in this general election, they're going to be trying to do down in Georgia. But rest assured, we will not have it. We will push forward and have Georgia come out and vote. The absentee ballots for Georgia are being mailed out today. Everyone down in Georgia, if you know friends or family, if you're in Georgia, you need to put in a special application just for this runoff election. Be certain you ask for the application for the runoff election in Georgia. If you're not registered to vote in Georgia, go to vote.org. Get registered. Folks, it's time to turn up, turn out. Michigan, Detroit showed you how to do it. Georgia, take the baton, run with it in Georgia, turn up in this vote, sign up, get your absentee ballot, and get your vote on. Santita, always wonderful to speak to you in the morning. Thank you so much for what you do and what you bring. And for the doctors that were speaking with regards to the African-American and the medical community, I encourage everyone to read Harriet Washington's Medical Apartheid. Wonderful read. Thank you so much, Santita.
Oh, hey, thank you for that, because that's what the holdup is. The inequities, everybody. We're going to be talking about what happened up in Michigan last night, certifying the vote. Got to talk about that. We're going to be talking about what's happening in Georgia. Going to carry this conversation over about these vaccines with more of the Santita Jackson Show. Like and share, everybody. Back in just a few minutes.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show. It's Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. We got a lot to pack in this hour. A whole lot to pack in because a whole lot of things have happened. We've been talking with Dr. Deborah Holden about vaccines and you. Marnie, I promise you we're going to get to you in a hot second, but I am Santita Jackson coming to you from the nation's flagship progressive talk radio station, WCPT 820 Chicago. Indeed, we are the largest we are the largest progressive talk radio station in the country. Took over the airwaves of Air America and AM 950 Radio. Radio, the voice of Progressive Minnesota up in Minneapolis, St. Paul. We're expecting a high in Chicago of 51 degrees, mostly sunny. Minneapolis, St. Paul, 52 degrees, partly cloudy. Yesterday, the Dow closed down 167 points. The NASDAQ closed down 24 points. The S&P 500 closed down 17 points. We got a lot to get out the way today. And of course, I'm going to turn over my headlines for the most part to a journalist who, for whom I have tremendous respect. I'm going to bring her up in a hot second, Rochelle Riley. She was with the Detroit Free Press. I encourage you to get her book, The Burden, African Americans and the Enduring Impact of Slavery. But first, we're going to be talking with, at the bottom of the hour, David Daley. David Daley, the author of Rat Effed, The True Story of the Secret Plan to Steal Our Democracy, and Unrigged, How Americans Are Fighting Back to Save Our Democracy, New York Times best-selling author, and a whole array of people to talk about. Hey, I know you want to talk about vaccines. You can call me about that. But we're going to be talking about Georgia, that Senate race. That's so important. That's pivotal. If we get those two seats, you will have, with the tiebreaker being vice president-elect, well, presumptively, certainly we hope she will be the vice president-elect by the time the Electoral College meets, and by the time they convene Kamala Harris, she'd be the tie-breaking vote. But if not, you still have Mitch McConnell in charge of the Senate. That's why getting Reverend Dr. Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff in the Senate so important. But how can we do that? What can we do to make that happen? We've been talking about these vaccines, Operation Warp Speed, Moderna and Pfizer, at least in the United States. Those are the vaccine companies who will have the lion's share of our market share. But we're finding out that 78% of the richest countries on earth have bought the vaccines. How fair is that? And black people and Americans generally are reluctant to take the vaccine. What do you think about that? In the meantime, let me get to a couple of these headlines. This is chaos. President Trump has fired the top election security official, Christopher Krebs, who said that there was no voter fraud this year. That is really amazing. You know, as we go look at some of these other headlines, let me go to you, Rochelle Riley, because I said what happened up in Wayne County, Michigan, is something we've got to look at, because the mainstream media called the election for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. We were all happy about that, excited. I said, but I see a fly in this ointment, because the mainstream media should report the news, not make it. It's in it's in the states that we certify these elections. This is not official yet, everybody. And we saw that last night in Wayne County. Some informed citizens saved the election last night. Rochelle Riley, author of The Burden, African Americans and the Enduring Impact of Slavery. One of the most brilliant journalists and a woman of tremendous, of impeccable integrity. Welcome home to this show. You know you have a home here. What happened last night in Wayne County? Oh, yeah. What happened?
Well, I can tell you that we here in Michigan are really so sick of some people in Michigan making us an embarrassing laughingstock nationally. What we've got that happened here is there's a woman named Monica Palmer who was on the four-member board of canvassers. She is being investigated for ethical complaints. They're hearing about it today. She is someone who, as a member of the board of canvassers, has run a dark money PAC to support candidates for the school board election, which is under her purview as one of the board of canvassers. You're not supposed to do that. She also stationed herself at the convention center to watch the count, as many Trumpers did, which you're also not supposed to do as a member of the board of canvassers. So she shouldn't even have been on the board of canvassers. But what they did was deadlock 2-2 over whether to certify the election, because as with every election, there are always some questions about some of the ballots. And what you do is you certify that the election is over, and then you call for an investigation. And thanks to some very cogent discussion with Jonathan Kinlock, a longtime member of the Democratic Party and a member of this board of canvassers, they reversed themselves and they did certify the election so that the election is over. But they've asked the Secretary of State to look at some of these things, which they should. But I'm so glad you started your intro with the fact that people need to really understand how elections work. This election is not over until the delegates vote and you know, make their preferences known. It's not over until all of these canvassers across the country have certified election results. So while the media is estimating and declaring based on what they're hearing and based on where vote counts are at a certain point, who they suspect has won, it's not over till it's over.
Thank you. And I felt it was very important. I know some people have not been happy with the fact that I have said, you know, no, she is still senator. She's still Senator Kamala Harris. She's not vice president-elect yet. He's not president-elect. That does not happen until the Electoral College meets and they vote. Then they become president and vice president-elect. Because we're going to miss fights like these.
They are the projected president-elect and vice president-elect. And it will work because the number of votes, even as they do, you know, double-checking on the votes. Now, you know, we don't have the recounts and the runoffs yet, but there isn't right now a way for Donald Trump to win, which is why you have people like Lindsey Graham, I refuse to call him a senator, trying to get votes thrown out in Georgia. He barely won in South Carolina, and he's trying to manipulate the election in another state. People need to understand why Georgia is so important. It's not about Georgia's two senators, although it will be when they serve their constituents. It's about making sure that Mitch McConnell is no longer in charge so that we can end this attempted McConnell-Trump coup of American government.
Amen to that. You know, amen. You know, I've got a lot of people who are still on with us. Dr. Deborah Verholten is still here with us. But I've got Aaron Connolly, brilliant, brilliant political organizer based here in Chicago. And we've got attorney Robert Patillo, who's down in Atlanta, in Georgia. He's the Southeastern Regional Director of Rainbow Push. And we have got, let me see who else. We've got a lot of folks who are going to talk to us about what's happening in Georgia. They can comment on about what happened up in Michigan. But I got to bring on, next week is Thanksgiving. And let me tell you, I've got someone who is about to make some meals for everybody that will make your toes curl. She is, she cooks the way our grandmother, everybody open them up. She cooks the way your grandmama or great grandmama used to cook. She doesn't measure. She just looks at it. And, best food in the world. In fact, look, some of the best eating in the world is up in Detroit. Oh, don't we miss the Queen of Soul with a great Christmas party she used to throw? Chitlins, everybody. She had everything. She had it all and great music. God rest her soul. May she rest in eternal peace. But let me bring on Shapiro Wells, Celebrations by Us, because she's doing my Thanksgiving meal. Because I have not made a turkey ever. My mother does that, and she puts it on the grill. But Shapiro, what's going on, girl?
Hey, good morning, Santita, and thank you for letting me speak this morning. I just want to tell everyone that we're still accepting orders until 11/19, which is Friday, so you can still get your orders in. And we are having great dinners, and we getting a great response. I appreciate everyone calling and inquiring about our prices and menus. So we have our turkey dinners, which is our Cajun turkey, our grilled turkey, our jerk turkey, our traditional turkey, as well as also our macaroni and cheese, our greens, our green beans. We have spaghetti, Cajun pasta. We also have our famous mustard choli. We have everything to take care of all of your holiday needs, as well as, of course, the dressing and everything like that. So we're putting together some great meal plans, and everyone can give us a call at 708-526-4546, and that's 708-526-4546. You can reach us on Facebook at Celebrations by Us, or you can email us at celebrationsbyus1@gmail.com. Thank you, Santita.
Very quickly. No, very quickly. You said you're putting together meal plans before you go. What do you mean?
Well, we have like three different packages that you can choose from, depending on how many people that you have in your family. So we have family starting at family of five, as well as also 10, 20, and 40 people. So we can do a wide variety of meals based on your needs.
And, and then freeze what you don't eat. Okay, everybody? That's what I'm doing. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Love you, Shapiro. Thank you so much. Celebrations by Us. I cannot wait, everybody. Okay. Let us get to what happened in Michigan.
Before we get back to GOP chaos, I need to know if we can get these meals in Detroit.
Wait. Shapiro, you still there?
I took down the number.
I'll
call it. Because after did that litany of delights, I need hers.
I want you to know I'm a living witness. I mean, she makes meals for my family for the holidays.
Well, I can go to Chicago and have them bring it out to the car. I want everything she just said.
Ooh, let me tell you.
You can get back to the
Here, I'm trying to get to politics, and you're like, no. She made my mouth water. I promise you. The food is excellent. It is excellent. But of course, you're going to stay with me for a little bit. I know you got to run, but stay right there, Rochelle. Rochelle Riley, the author of The Burden. I met her when she was with the Detroit Free Press. Brilliant columnist, journalist, and author of The Burden, African Americans and the Enduring Impact of Slavery. Wow. Slavery just colors everything that we do, black, white, brown, yellow, red. It is central to the American experience, everybody. You need to read this book. Dr. Deborah Furholden, who's been on fire this morning, Associate Dean of Public Health at Michigan State University, and Attorney Robert Petillo, Southeastern Regional Director for Rainbow Push and Indeed, he has his own broadcast on WAOK, the iconic talk radio station in Atlanta, Black Talk Radio, every Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 12 to 3 Central Standard Time, 10 to 1, Carol, and everybody out there on the West Coast, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. every Sunday. And then we've got Erin Connolly, brilliant political organizer, We Bridge Consultants, and boy, oh boy. Let me start with you, Attorney Robert Petillo, because we've been talking before we get to Marnie and Raleigh and Tanya and everybody. We were looking at Georgia, and then we saw what happened last night in Wayne County. And, you know, what I think about what would have happened if people had not been paying attention, Robert. I mean, this could have gone in a completely different direction.
Well, you're absolutely correct. I think this is why it's important to understand that Chisel just said that this is not over yet. That I think much of America has moved on. We realize what the math is. But the Republicans have not. Trump has not. They are still in court all over the country. They are still interfering with the secretaries of state, with boards of elections. They are still trying to find ways to steal this. We saw the Georgia Secretary of State down here, who we've had our battles with in the past, snitch on Lindsey Graham. It says that Lindsey Graham wanted to get ballots thrown out in Georgia, and now it comes out that Lindsey Graham tried to do the same thing in three other states. So we have to be vigilant of what's happening nationwide to make sure that the will of the people is exerted. And also we have to ensure that on January the 5th, when the end of the runoff election is here in Georgia, that we are monitoring and ensuring that the will of the people is executed. Remember, the voter registration deadline for Georgia is December the 7th. The runoff election begins early voting on December 14th. You can request an absentee ballot right now. And that week between December 14th and December 24th, between the beginning of early voting and when Christmas begins on Christmas Eve, that's really going to be the determining period of time. Normally, only 10% of people vote in runoff elections in Georgia. So out of 5 million people, that's going to be 500,000. Anybody who gets 250,000 plus one gets to decide the fate of the United States of America. That's all. Those are the number of people that it will take to decide whether or not we'll get student loan reform, whether or not we'll get health care reform, whether or not we'll have a functioning cabinet, whether or not we'll have a court system which is impacted against us. It's going to come down to 250,000 folks in Georgia. So if you know people there, encourage them to vote. If you have the ability to send text messages, emails, join organizations to do letter writing, postcard writing campaigns, phone banking, text banking, post about it on social media, because normally it's 2-1 Republicans to Democrats voting in runoffs. So it's important to educate the public, and we bump that turnout up to 30% from 10%, then Democrats win easily. So it's going to take an all-hands-on-deck effort in order to win this election, because the folks on the other side have not quit. This is not over to them yet.
It's not. I mean, Erin Connolly, you've had some real questions because you're based in Chicago, but you are also, you operate all over the country. What have been your questions? You've talked to Robert.
Yeah. So my questions that I'm getting from some of our activists and organizers that were working in other battleground states, volunteers that have been trained for years but want to put their remote and digital efforts into this very, very important work in Georgia, but want to make sure that we're directing the folks to the people that are on the ground doing the work and not just providing funds and support for groups that aren't coordinating on the ground. So I want to make sure that we're doing all we can to amplify the great work that you're doing, Attorney Petillo and all of the other groups in Georgia, to get us across this finish line. And as we all know, we do not want Mitch McConnell in charge of our policies and our vision for this country for the next 4 years. So what are those places that we can start directing folks to right now, whether it's, volunteering for phone banks, as you said, or participating in some of these postcard writing campaigns? What's the best place for us to direct folks as they have questions?
Okay, if they have questions, of course, they can contact me at the Rainbow Push Coalition Southeast Region. That's rpatillo@rainbowpush.org. That's rpatillo at rainbowpush.org. Also, LaTosha Brown at Black Voters Matter. Infe Ufo at the New Georgia Project are outstanding people working on the ground. And, of course, Barbara Arnwine at Transformative Justice Coalition will be down in Georgia working on the John Lewis Good Trouble marches around the state. So I will start with those organizations because they're granularly down on ground level. I think everybody knows the difference between the people actually doing the work and the people talking about doing the work. These are people doing the work.
Thank you very much.
Well, I mean, because, there's a lot of organizing that needs to happen on the ground, Robert, and, and Rochelle and Aaron, because you have, 30,000, Robert, young people who could get registered to vote right now. Maybe they were not able to vote November 3rd, but they did turn 18 right after November 3rd, so they're able to vote in this election.
Yeah, any young person who turns 18 before January the 5th, 2021. Mm. So if you're going to be 18 on January the 5th, if you're a New Year's baby or if you have a Christmas baby out there who's going to be grown, they can register on December 7th and vote on January the 5th. Additionally, anybody who's in custody, for example, for a misdemeanor offense, so you got a DUI, you ran a stoplight, you got 30 days in jail, it happens to run over through election day on January 5th, they can vote by absentee ballot prior to the election to ensure they have the opportunity to do so. Elderly people who are in senior high rises, they respond very well to letter writing campaigns. And also when you bring them their actual absentee ballot application, help them to fill it out, get it in the mail and get their ballots in so they can vote early. So they're not going out in December during a pandemic to try to vote. Those are very effective. And when you have a margin where it only is going to take, if turnout numbers hold, 250,000 votes to decide two United Senate seats, then these are things that we can do, and the work can be done to pull those things out.
Why are you concerned about what's happening in Georgia, Aaron?
Well, I'm concerned for the same reasons we heard your other brilliant panelists say, right? This isn't just about the Senate seats. While it is, it will definitely be that for the folks in Georgia. So I don't want to take that away, that this is their representation in the federal government. But the trajectory of our country is at stake. If Mitch McConnell is reelected, he will stop any meaningful reforms on the progressive side that we're able to push through in a Biden administration. It will be much more difficult, although we did see some evidence of what the limits of Mitch McConnell's power this week with the Fed confirmation. However, we need to make sure that we have a working government and that we can move these policies through, that we have support for the big, big things that we were talking about yesterday on your show, like expanding healthcare access for Americans, adding some cash transfer programs and economic stimulus in the form of direct cash payments to folks like Andrew Yang was talking about. Those things won't happen if Mitch McConnell is in charge. We cannot afford another 4 years plus. And what my concern is that I believe these votes, this decision in Georgia is really, it is going to impact my not only my personal health and life, but the generations to come in this country, right? We have such an opportunity, and it's important that we all show up and do this work, as Robert said, and not just talk about it and not forget that the election isn't over, that this is still a fight on the ground, and that these folks that have been working so hard, that we, you know, share the memes and photos and celebrations in the last few weeks about how Georgia has saved us. Well, let's make sure we do our part to support those organizers, to support those folks that are coming in from other campaigns, that are hitting the ground, that are dropping literature, that are registering voters during a pandemic. We really can make a difference, even if we're far away. And it's my goal in my personal work and professional work, and to activate every organizer that we know in the country, every volunteer that we still have in our cell phone from any campaign. That's how I am trying to amplify this great work and make those connections in the next few weeks. And I think if we all commit to that, commit to getting five people even to join a virtual phone bank, or put some accountability to pick a senior home and write those postcards, those little things really can make a difference. And we don't want to sit back and regret not doing just a little bit more in January when these returns are coming in.
Well, look, because let me tell you, it was the activism of people on the ground last night in Wayne County, in Detroit, that saved this election. Be very, very clear on that. And Rochelle, when we get on the other side of the break before you go, I want you to let people know one more time what happened, because that's really big. This election is not over yet. The election has not been certified. I know that the pathway is narrow for President Trump to win, but there is a pathway nonetheless, and it's going to take your activism and your awareness to hold on to this election. Stay right there, everybody. More of the Santita Jackson Show in just a few minutes.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Wednesday, November 18th, 2020, the Santita Jackson Show. Meet my morning stars on the Santita Jackson and Friends page and on WCBT 820. And I want to hear from you, everybody. And you can call or text me at 773-763-WCPT. Thank you, GWC Injury Lawyers, for the opportunity to text. And I want to hear from you. We've been talking about, oh, my goodness, we're going to start talking about Georgia. And, of course, we are talking about Georgia. Georgia is on our mind. We've got Election 2020 is still in effect. It's not over yet. It's not settled yet. And we saw what happened in Wayne County. I was able to pull. I called her just before we went on air. Maybe I was already on air. I was on a break. And I called Rochelle Riley, journalist, former opinion writer at the Detroit Free Press. And she has a fantastic book. We're going to have to come back on to talk about this more extensively, The Burden, African Americans and the Enduring Impact of Slavery. It's an incredible book. She's absolutely brilliant. I want you, before we bring on David Daly and Reverend Dr. Todd Yeary and the whole panel, to tell us what happened and what happened in Wayne County last night.
I am happy to, because it's so important for people to understand the complexity of American elections. Donald Trump was elected in 2016 not because he got the most votes, but because he got the most delegates. And there are two things that have to happen before anybody can be declared anything. You have to have boards of canvassers across the country to certify the results of all of these elections. And then you have to have those delegates to cast their votes based on what the popular vote was. None of that has finished. And literally, the Wayne County Board of Canvassers, which, you know, split 2-2. First of all, they should have five people, but split 2-2, Republican and Democrat, not to certify the Wayne County election, which includes Detroit. We're talking thousands and thousands of votes. And they weren't going to do it because of unexplained discrepancies between the number of absentee ballots and the number of absentee ballots counted. You record a ballot, you count a ballot. Some of them didn't match. This happens every election. You go back and you find out what they were. And they were not going to certify the election until something like that could happen. But, of course, that could take much longer than anybody has time to before January 5th, which means those votes may not have been counted. One of the Republicans on this particular board of canvassers is a woman from Grosse Pointe Woods, which is one of the whitest of the eastern suburbs just east of Detroit, is a Republican who is already under investigation for alleged ethical violations. She ran a dark money PAC to help elect school board members when she is one of the people who would count those votes, and you're not supposed to do that. And then she parked herself at the convention center on election night to watch the vote counting, which as a member of the Board of Canvassers, you're also not supposed to do. So thanks to huge outcry, not just from liberals and Democrats, but from everybody, they reversed themselves and they did vote unanimously to certify the election. But people must pay attention to these types of things all over America. You have to watch the entire election process because it ain't over until it's over. And if you don't believe that, remember that Hillary Clinton got the most votes, but Donald Trump was elected by the Electoral College.
Drop. How about that, David Daley? Huh?
That's exactly right. What we're watching here is a real-time attempt to undo a 6 million vote majority in the popular vote and to throw the election through technicalities and these little check boxes that people don't usually think about. What they're trying to do is find a way to push this into state legislatures that Republicans have already gerrymandered so severely that they control majorities even with fewer votes. This has been the case in Michigan all decade long. Democrats have won more votes for the state house in every single election over the last decade, and they've never controlled the chamber because of the way that Republicans gerrymandered the state and drew the lines to lock themselves into power. And now what they want to do is find a way to throw this into the state legislature and to have Electoral College electors handed out by these by this unearned Republican majority overriding the will of the people. And they want to get this into the legislatures, and they want to get this into a Supreme Court that they have packed with ideologues in robes. And if we are not careful at every single step of the way, this is going to happen. And it's not just Donald Trump, folks. This has been going on for years. And in order to be successful, it requires Republicans to stop believing in democracy at every single step of the way. And it's happening.
When you say it's happening, right. I mean, no, Rochelle, I'm sorry, please, go on.
No, I was just going to say, thank you, David. Thank you so much. This is what people don't understand. This is the long game. This is not just this election. This is not just these attempts to steal an election. This is what has been planned for some time between gerrymandering, between voter suppression. I mean, literally, Donald Trump put a donor of his in charge of the Postal Service because he knew that the Democrats were pushing mail-in ballots. And we watched that happen. So now they're attacking that. For Lindsey Graham to say, if we keep mail-in balloting, we'll never elect another Republican. Well, by God, we must keep mail-in balloting. But he literally wants to stop people from voting so the Republicans can stay in power. So before I go, I need to say two things. My job for the next 7 weeks in Detroit, Michigan, is to make sure that people everywhere I know, in Texas where my grandson lives, in North Carolina where the rest of my family is, that they understand that Georgia matters, that it is not about defeating Donald Trump. It's about defeating the McConnell-Trump attempted coup of American government and to make sure that we do not let them continue this long game. I want to thank you for mentioning The Burden. The paperback just came out. People can go to RochelleRiley.com and see a video of last night's first national reading of excerpts from the book. It was amazing. Soledad O'Brien and Nicole Hannah-Jones, a bunch of us read from that, and then we had a discussion. And you can get those. Just go to RochelleRiley.com. And if you want to follow me at Rochelle Riley on Twitter, my Twitter feed has been on fire. There's literally smoke coming from the computer because we have to, everywhere in this country, fight for our democracy. Because when I tell you the GOP is trying to steal it, listen to David, read his book. It is absolutely true. But this rigging started long ago, and
they
are playing this long game while we have not been paying attention. And this election is not over until January 5th. So I will be literally, I'm ready to drive to Atlanta and start setting up shop where I can do stuff on the ground. So go to Rainbow Push. go and help the people who are really there getting folks out to vote. And you must make a choice in this country. You are either for democracy or for the GOP. It is that simple. It doesn't matter. I'm not a Democrat, so it doesn't matter about party. It's a matter of saving America. So thank you for having me on.
Amen. No, this is about being a Republican, small r, lowercase r. This is about being a Democrat, lowercase d. You know, the parties, look, stop that. No. This is about saving the republic. This is about moving toward democracy. That's what this is about. That's why you have to hold the media accountable. They have misdirected.
Yeah.
They have misinformed. Yeah. This election is not over. They called it. And we cannot be played. They called it. So they're getting you riled up without giving you the information so that you can fight on the ground. And because some people were fighting on the ground and because they had information, they saved us last night.
And we will continue to be vigilant, but everybody needs to be vigilant everywhere. Everywhere.
So everybody, like and share this broadcast.
All of your panelists, I'm so proud of the people that you have on. I'm going to go and see how to order this Thanksgiving dinner. Please get a copy of The Burden.
Fight
for America. This is not Trump versus Biden.
No.
This is literally Trump and the cabal versus America.
This is the cabal. I mean, and everybody's in it. Okay, so y'all, this is so much bigger. Thank you for that, Reverend Dr. Todd Yeary. This is big. This really is about saving the republic and moving toward democracy, Reverend Dr. Yeary. Is Reverend Dr. Yeary there? Well, you know, let me go back to you, David. I mean, this really is about democracy, small d.
I'm here. I had to make sure.
If y'all don't get off mute, I don't know what I'm going to do with you.
You started talking about Thanksgiving dinner, you didn't want me off mute in that moment. You know I get caught up, so I had to kind of gather myself. Now I'm ready. All right.
Okay.
Everybody, this is about learning the rules of civics. What happens is we've sterilized our understanding of how government works. And so we operate according to a frame that is given to us, not a frame that we've tested. So what we see in Michigan, elections are managed and administrated by the several states. That's why you have these distinctions in terms of what we're hearing in ballot counting and canvassing and what the rules are and what the rules aren't. And because we don't understand how the rules apply to us at ground level, we get caught up, as you mentioned, in what the media interprets for us. Now, when we say the media, we're talking about plural, right? There are multiple angles, multiple perspectives. We're getting information coming at us from all sides all the time. Can't turn the TV off, can't turn the radio off. And most of it, if we were to test it, has a little bit of accuracy, but a whole lot of questionability. So here's what it comes down to. It comes down to we've got to be a more civically informed, politically savvy electorate. And we can't get caught up in the elections of popularity and imagery. We've got to make elections about policy, because here's what we've seen. We have been enamored, overwhelmed. We are intoxicated by the presidential election outcome. And what we don't realize happened on the same day as part of the same process is you now have 30 state legislatures that will go through redistricting and reapportionment processes that will reshape the rules of the game of civics at state levels for the next decade. And so if we don't pay attention, we can't go for the Jedi mind trick. We can't just follow the bright, shiny object as if we are too aloof to understand that our lives are too important, the issues are too great for us to get sidetracked by stuff at the top. We've got to get to being specialists about the civic process where we are. That's why Georgia matters. Georgia is a statewide, it is a statewide race for two U.S. senators that will impact the balance of power in the upper chamber and who controls the agenda. It has national implications. It is not a national race. So me being in Maryland, I can't impose Maryland state needs on Georgia's electorate. Mm-hmm. We've got to support Georgians on the agenda for Georgia from their two U.S. senators. We know what that means, but in the end, if we get the right two in, it's going to help all of us. This is not the time to go after platitudes and rhetorical flourishes. It's time for us to learn civics for real and get
yes.
to be specialists in what affects us.
Robert Petillo, what do you need us to do? And then you, David, because there are a lot of moving parts here. Robert, what could we do? When I talked to Erin yesterday, she said, I'm willing to get in my car and drive down. She's a brilliant organizer. I'm willing to give Georgia everything until we get these two people elected. I mean, what can we do where we are? You know, I mean, what can we do? What should we do? Because this is big. And when I mean, and just given what happened in Michigan last night, you can see that this, you can see the implications of this. I mean, these, that is why Lindsey Graham is after your Secretary of State, you know, throughout these votes. I mean, they're literally going from state to state right now. And then I see Reverend Warnock under just tremendous attack. I mean, he's under attack nationally. What should we do? And why is he under such attack, Robert? If you all don't get off this mute, you're killing me. Well, you know what? Let me go to you, David. I mean, because this is big. I mean, and I want you to jump back in, Reverend Dr. Yeary, because they're attacking, really, stay right there, David. They're attacking his faith. I mean, his messaging. I mean, the way he approaches the Bible, all of that. Reverend Dr. Warnock. I mean, they have made Reverend Dr. Jeremiah Wright, who we all know and love, who has been of service, not just in Chicago, but his whole ministry has been about service and, you know, and education. You know, that's one of the things that I admired about him growing up, that his Sunday school was actually school. I mean, you had to get a real education in the Bible, and who he's been made out to be in the mainstream media, Reverend Dr. Yeary, that's just not who he is.
Yeah, well, let's be clear. They did it to Dr. King. They tried to do it to your father. At the end of the day, this is not new. We've seen this movie before, so this should not be shocking to us. Here's what I find to be really intriguing, and I think that in the rabid angst to try to stoke fear, the Republican Party made a huge mistake on yesterday. Kelly Loeffler is going to debate Raphael Warnock. Now, we remember when John Ossoff debated Senator Perdue, and it was such a devastating embarrassment that Perdue won't touch the word debate, much less engaging. Here's what I know about my immediate predecessor, my fat brother, and my friend, Raphael G. Warnock. He is not just a preacher. He is a student of history, and he knows the conditions of his people, and he is of the soil of Georgia, born in the Savannah area. So I think we just have to recognize that we've seen it. This is the game that they play, and we know who they're talking to. They're trying to stoke the racial dog whistling under the guise of religion, so that they can then get their base to reengage in a voting process that typically has just abysmal turnout. We understand what this is, but I think if you want to see some good entertainment, find out when that debate is. If you can't see it live, I need you to record it, play it back, because I believe, knowing Raphael Warnock as I do, he is not going to go in as the novice. He's going to go in as one whose dissertation is on Dr. King. He walks in the spaces that Dr. King walked in. He represents the continuation of the vision and the mission of Dr. King in many ways at Ebenezer Church. I need you to put your seatbelt on and just watch, because you're getting ready to see somebody go straight to school.
Just fasten your seatbelts, my friends, because one thing you never want to do, my mother said this to me when I was a child, don't get into verbal fisticuffs with a black preacher, a trained one. Oh, no, you really don't want to do that. They're the best. They're the best. David Daly. Huh. You know, when I reached out to you, we were going to talk about the Georgia Senate race, and that's important. But then, you know, what was happening last night, that came up too. So pardon me, you know, but I know I can throw all this stuff at you because this is the stuff that you've been writing about in Rat Effed. I mean, it's not a secret plan. I mean, it's been a secret plan, but it's happened in plain sight and, you know, in open eyes wide shut, right? And Unrigged. We're fighting back. And these are your two books, Rat Effed. But if you want to know, if you want to see what he's written about, what he wrote about like 3-4 years ago, this is a plan that they've been rolling out, David, and watching them go from state to state to state, right? I mean, I think we need to understand that some people are planning, right?
You know, when you are a party that represents a shrinking white demographic base and you want to maintain power without changing or reaching out to other people, you have to do that by changing the rules of the game and then making it harder for other people who are not going to support you to vote. And I think that's what we have seen. Now, you can trace the problems in our democracy back to the very founding of our democracy. But I think Republicans woke up after the 2008 election. They saw parts of the South go to Barack Obama. They saw a changing American demographic and a changing nation. And they said, well, what are we going to do about it? They had the option, as we all know from the Republican autopsy, of talking to everybody and trying to change their message and be more inclusive in a diverse, multiracial country. What they decided to do instead in 2010 was a plan called Red Map, the Redistricting Majority Project, and they took over state legislatures in all of the states that we're talking about. Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Florida, Ohio, and they redrew all of the lines, all of the district lines for the state legislature and for Congress in such a way as to be able to hold big majorities even with fewer votes. It's really easy. You simply pack all of the Democratic voters into as few districts as you want. You take the remaining seats for yourself. This has played out over the course of the last decade in state after state after state. Then you pass laws in all of those states, then they make it more difficult for people to vote. It's, you know, it's voter ID laws. You change the number of early voting days. You do voter purges. And then you appoint judges to lower courts and the U.S. Supreme Court that will do things like Chief Justice Roberts did in 2013 in the Shelby County case and undo the key enforcement principles of the Voting Rights Act and allow states to go hog wild on voter suppression without any checks. Indeed, the afternoon that decision came down in 2013, Texas announces that they are going to put their draconian voter ID bill into effect. We have been watching this. We have been watching this intentional Republican minority rule creep up on us for years. And this is the natural outgrowth of it. This is where it all heads. And they're being really honest about it. You had Jenna Ellis, the president's lawyer, tweeting last night that this action in Wayne County was the first step towards pushing the election into the state legislature and then trying to get it into the U.S. House and into the courts. This is the goal. We have got to be vigilant because there are all these little checkpoints along the way between people voting and then the Electoral College rendering their decision. There are still places along this path where things can go askew in ways we don't expect. It's 2020, people.
It's 2020. You know, I'm going to give, we've got about just under 3 minutes left. I want to get some closing thoughts from everybody. Dr. Deborah Verholden, you've been waiting, but you've been also getting people registered to vote. You personally pushed people to the polls in about 30 seconds. What's your takeaway from today's show?
Well, you know, I want to get us
I want to get us to a point where when we have what we need in place to keep our people safe and protected, that we can make it there. So I just remind everybody, especially because elections are not over, everything is on the ballot. All the things that we need, all the provisions that people are complaining we don't have in place, the fact that COVID spread is off the charts, all that stuff is on the ballot because who you vote for determines all that stuff. And I really appreciate my brothers and sisters in Wayne County who stayed on post and stayed on their toes ready to jump into action. And I think we all could take a chapter out of that book because we all have to be on our toes and ready for the nonsense that's coming our way.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. Reverend Dr. Urey, 30 seconds.
Very quick. It's very simple. The question is, if your vote didn't matter, why would they go to such extremes and fight so hard to take your vote away? There's a reason for it. If you don't vote, you give consent to your own oppression. Everybody needs to stay fully engaged and be a specialist in civics.
Erin Connolly, 30 seconds.
Well, I advise everyone to use the time that you would have been driving to Thanksgiving holidays or out and about, do some research and see the organization that you want to put some time into that's assisting in Georgia. We heard about the great work and we know about the great work the Rainbow Push Coalition does in Georgia. Latasha Brown's organization, Stacey Abrams' organization, we have a lot of options to work directly with campaigns if you want to be partisan. And also there's nonpartisan options as attorney C.K. Hoffler is part of the work doing election protection down in Georgia. That's going to be an important point as well. So pick a place that you think you can make a difference and put an action plan together this holiday season. We have to be grateful for our democracy. We have to show up with action. And thank you all for all of the work and information today. So let's get out there and do it.
David Daly, these last 30 seconds belong to you. Everybody get the book. The book's Rat Effed and Unrigged. David Daly, 30 seconds.
Democracy is a verb, but we either use it actively or we lose it. And this is the time to stand up and actively use it. Everything is on the ballot. These races in Georgia are crucial to seeing any action and leadership on the virus, on the economy, on voting rights over the next decade. And then starting next year, you're going to have a redistricting in all of these states. We can't look away after an election. We've got to have our hands on Dr. King's arc of moral justice at all times, or there are other people who are going to bend it in the direction we don't want it to go.
Amen, everybody. The election is not over. Be vigilant. Pay attention. Going to get some closing thoughts on the Santita Jackson Show. Until tomorrow, God bless you. I love you, but God loves you more. Have a great one.